Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and some parts of the East Africa region this Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024. Fighting between civilians and South Sudan People's Defense Forces erupts in Nasir County.
One soldier is went out in the morning. He went to check the fishing net. So those civilians, they came and they killed that guy. So this is the reason this is happening in the morning.
And communities with roots in Ethiopia and South Sudan are fighting at a refugee camp in Kenya.
The youth came at night hours. She attacked somebody in the house. He's a young person, he's a family. She attacked at home at night hours at 7 o'clock. It's PM.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. One person was killed and three others wounded during clashes at the fishing site in Nasir County between local vigilante group known as the White Army and the members of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. Authorities and civil society groups in the county are calling for speedy integration of the various armed groups across the country into the National Army to prevent more killings. Mohamed Abraham Court reports for VOA from Malakal.
Jikan Geng, the police inspector in Nasir County of Upper Nile State, confirmed the clashes. He says fighting started along the river on Wednesday morning.
One soldier is went out in the morning. He went to check the fishing net. So those civilians, they came and they killed that guy. So this is the reason which is happening in the morning. Is one of the other city up who been killed by the civilians. Three people that wounded.
He says the situation calmed down after the police convinced civilians to stop attacking members of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces.
We managed to advise the citizen, you sit down, don't go anywhere. And also we talk with them also. There's three people also with us now. Those who are came in the morning for the, they are working here in the town. So when that one happened, we brought them now that together with the commissioner. They need to be integrated. This is the way they can make it.
John Luong, an activist in Upper Nile State, says the civilians and the military compete over fishing rights in Nasir.
This is a very big concern. The issue now is the issue of the military barrack. You know, the military barrack is stationed on the side of fishing side. And now when the civilian want to come, those youth, when they want to come to fish, the army prevent them from fishing. And that is the point of contention between them.
He says the military barracks should be relocated further from fishing side. Luong says the only solution to the conflicts in Upper Nile is for the politicians in Juba to speak to members of their communities to stop fighting. He says some politicians are fueling the conflict across the state.
The other time there was a meeting and they came up with a resolution from both sides, the military and the youth. They agreed that they would be working together. But now the issue repeated itself. Yeah, the whole of Upper Nile actually need politicians themselves. It will not be resolved only by the civilian. What is needed is the politicians seated in Juba, they should come and talk to the people because they are the one who actually mobilize those people.
Reth Yen, a Nasir County resident, says he thinks the solution to the problem lies in integrating SSPDF and SPLMIO forces. He says the relationship between SSPDF and civilians is rough.
The other thing is like, you know, the SSPDF in Nasir, they don't have a good relationship with community in Nasir. The only solution for it is like, if they move out from Nasir and the White Army and their family remain only in Nasir, this will be the second foundation or second solution to this.
In February, fighting erupted in Nasir town between civilians and the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. The clash resulted in some death and many people were injured or displaced. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwad, reporting from Malakal.
Still on clashes, two communities found in Ethiopia and South Sudan are fighting at the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. One community leader says most members of his group are under siege as violence continues at the Kaliboi refugee settlement. Samuel Gatoch, a community leader at Kaliboi, accused youth from the Anyuak of attacking Nuer families. The Anyuak community denies starting the clashes.
Yeah, you know, recently the fighting came from the youth start fighting, and then she realized all the community.
You're a leader among your community. What are you doing to tell the young people not to engage in fighting that results into people losing their property and life?
Yes, even now I'm a leader of the community, and we try a lot to call the meeting from both sides of the Anyuak leaders, and then several times, four times, or five times. But the leader of Anyuak, she refused to make the meeting as a leader, and that's when something happened. And next day, the youth came at 9 hours. She attacked somebody in the house. He's a very young person, he's a family. She attacked at home at 9 hours at 7 o'clock, 8 p.m. There's a problem. So, you know, Anyuak, he also bring the problem from the Ndele side. That's why he bring here up to here in Kenya, And there's a problem there in the Ndele. That's why he started here then, Anyuak.
I spoke with some leaders from the other side, the Anyuak, and they were pointing fingers at your community for starting the problem.
No. It's not correct. It's not us. It's not us. It's Anyuak. They want to cause us a problem. Even now, we are leaving the areas now. Our area now is unity. No hours, no anything. All the hours now we looted. The hours now is unity. Our family now and children now, we used to suffering now in Kabul 4.
Talk to me about the situation there. You were saying skirmishes started since June 24th. How many people were killed in that intercommunal violence?
Yes, the situation now is very worse. The situation is very worse. A lot of people now is here in Kakumfo, children and mama, and ladies here in Kakumfo suffering. And also there's people now, some other people missing now, and some others now is killing. And our people now, we get some other now is killing from shooting from police. They want to shoot our people.
Which police shot your people?
No. I tell my people now, some others you get now in the luggage, we have some room for the bullet. And for us as refugees, we don't have a bullet. Who is killed these people?
I'm asking you.
So our people now, we're getting dying now, we get the bullet. My mother, we shoot with the bullet. By the time when the fighting came, the police, she sell out the areas, and then we shoot out all the people in the fighting. That's why people now is dying there in the road. There's people now dying there, and we get in shooting.
The Kenya police plus the UNHCR officials issued an appeal that you should all coexist together and live peacefully. But you continue fighting and...
Yeah, our life now is difficult as the people from Kampenye. Our life is not good because the people are very bad. And we are now in the areas where we live already, nobody in the areas. And the people suffering here in Kakumapo. No anything. No house for sleeping. No clothes, no everything. Even the food is not there because she left us there and she left food, she left everything in Kampenye. So you can live with IMT in Kakumapo. That's the problem now. The situation is very hard and very worse.
How many people are there with you at Kakumapo who came from Kaliboi?
Yeah, my community, my people from Kaliboi, all of them is in Kakumapo now. Nobody in Kaliboi. Kaliboi now is empty. Nobody, because no ours. Even the church, he destroyed even our church. All the church in Kaliboi from your community, all he destroyed, all the ours. Nobody is there in Kaliboi. Now for us, we are here in Kakumapo now. And my people in Kakumapo. Nobody there in Kakumapo.
That's Samuel Gatok, a community leader at Kaliboi refugee camp in Kenya. He spoke to me from Kakuma refugee camp earlier today. Last week, I reached Achan Thok, a refugee at Kaliboi refugee settlement, who told this program about the nature of the ongoing intercommunal violence at Kaliboi refugee settlement.
The group attackers, they are newer from South Sudan. Some of them, they are from Ethiopia, so they're getting together. There is no reason, we don't know. We don't know the reason. They just come attack us only. They attack the target annually.
And what are the camp administration, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, doing to diffuse the tension?
So I think the problem was the Kenya government. They are also on the Mandaman and Kenya and town. There is no problem there for them as a government issue. But as from here, yeah, they brought some the police here, but the police is running up from the camp. The colony we are, the way they are, we are living now, the refugees, the condition of the police is very, it's very small. Even now, right now, there were place now we are standing now with the children together. There's not the police. It is us now, we are standing alone here now.
How many refugees from Ethiopia are there?
The refugees from Ethiopia now, the Anuak who was here and the refugees in Kalobiei, they cannot reach even 3,000 people. They are very small. Maybe it will be 2,000 something, only Anuak. But others, not in Ethiopia and Somali and Oromo and Amara, we are some in distance. They are in Kakuma. They are in Kakuma from us, Kalobiei from Kakuma here. Yeah. They are distant from us. But some Somali now who are here with us together, the Ethiopian, they just stay with their own. They don't have a problem with this newer. The newer did not attack Somali. They attack only Anuak here who was living in Kalobiei.
Let me understand this from you. The two communities are all from Ethiopia. Why are you fighting among yourselves?
The problem now, I think this problem now from what they're attacking us, there's some problem going on in Ethiopian ground there in Gambela. In Gambela, so, Anuak and Nuer, they're fighting. They want Anuak to move away from their land, homeland in Ethiopia.
So this problem started in Gambela, yeah. Ethiopia, between the two communities. Then it's now spreading to refugee camps.
Yes, now it's starting from the refugee camp because there are many in Ethiopia. There is 7 camps in Ethiopia, refugee camp from South Sudan. So those people, they say they cannot be calling their from refugees from South Sudan. They want land. They want land, Ethiopian land, Gambela. They need land to be them.
Talk to me about the condition of women and children in the refugee camp where you are in the backdrop of this fighting.
There's no food. There is no food because from us, you did finger, then you get 1,000 for a month for yourself to be taken away. And the cash and put it in the market, you get 1,000. But this money will not reach for us, the cash money. It's not cash money at Wuhan. You just wait for 40 days to get 1,000 for one each person. So now the money is running up from the refugees. Children, they are dying with the anger, even the whole people now in the refugees camp, Colombia. We are very tired of this thing.
I saw a statement from the police yesterday, the Kenyan police. They have imposed a curfew, yeah, in the camp. And
yes,
you're telling me the number of the police are, yes, few. But the police is doing something to diffuse the tension.
But the time also I was there, the people who was attacked on that place, I'm the person who was there in neighborhood 41. Even the dead body of the people, when the police come at the morning, they want to take them again. Another attacker come, they take the body around 11 p.m. in the morning time. They're supposed to take the body in the morning time, but there's no way because these people knew they are very many.
And how many people were killed in these attacks?
The people who were killed now, the people, a lot of people, but some people I don't know. But from us, our side now, the Gambela was Anuak. One person was dead, 4 people there was injured. Very injured. Now the others left, they were taken to the network now, and the hospital and that one. Some of one is the man, the Kakuma mission. But other people in situation that then they are told now they were thinking there's no way they can go to hospital because the hospital from us here, there's distance from us here. They cannot move from there. You alone. You will be taken again, you will be killed by anyone. So we don't have to get money to take taxi or the pick to go to hospital. This now is a problem. People now were thinking some of them they are told.
That's Achan Tok, an Ethiopian refugee at Kalibowei settlement in Kakuma. She spoke to me last week about the clashes going on there between refugees from Ethiopia. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, journalists from the Nile Basin countries discuss the fate of Africa's natural resources. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Our words of wisdom for today comes from Central Equatorial State.
I'm Robert Wane from South Sudan in capital Juba. My proverb is in Bari language, which says, Lele ngutu bain, lokon jujukin, nyokunje kingajin kanyet, itolipudian, madikonje gokonan, tukorean, kode tumatan. In English, which says, no one can reverse his or her age to childhood, no matter what wealth or position he or she may have. Thank you so much.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A group of journalists from the 10 Nile Basin countries are in Ugandan capital Kampala to improve their reporting skills about the River Nile, wildlife and the environment. Dennis Logonyi was among the journalists on the course and tells us more from Kampala.
The Nile is the longest water body in the world and a backbone of many of Africa's fragile ecosystems. Environmentalists say the Nile faces new threats from climate change, population growth and economic expansion. Journalists from Egypt, Ethiopia, Sudan, South Sudan, Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda, Eritrea, Tanzania, Burundi and Democratic Republic of Congo are attending a week of training on how to use information, geographic location, and imaging for journalism. Henry Owino, a journalist from Kenya, says training on data collection can help journalists produce researched stories on the Nile.
One of the key things that I've learned is that it adds value to the story. It gives the story credibility. People believe on what you are doing that it has been researched. Most journalists, they are normally, they either do text, or they do audio, or they are just TV. But now that there's something called convergent, where text is involved, voice is involved, the video is involved, all this combined in a one story. So those who cannot read can listen to the audio part of it. Those who cannot listen can see through the video. And those who can do both, either of them, advantage to them.
The training is funded by InfoNile, a cross-border group of what are called geojournalists who use geographic data to cover stories. The training aims to help journalists cover critical stories on water issues in the Nile River Basin. Rwandan journalist Annonciata Byukusenge says she's grateful for the skills offered in the InfoNile training.
Before the training of the InfoNile in Rwanda, we were not aware about the data journalism. Even myself, I didn't produce any story contain data, but after getting that skills, I produce stories containing data. I'm still more training to read. I need to be a specialist in data journalism because in my country we have a gap about data journalism.
Owino says journalism has shifted to a new era of technology.
To train journalists, for them to adapt these new skills in journalism, it will take time because journalists, they still live in that era of competition. They always want to break news. So those who are doing news, okay, they can run with the news, but if you want to do a proper research story with a background, you have to sit down, you gather your information, your data, and you do a lot of multiple sources, interviews, to help you verify whatever you are writing. For InfoNile to get journalists to do this, they have to train various countries of the Nile Basin.
Frederick Mujira is a Ugandan journalist and co-founder of InfoNile. He says there is a big trust gap between journalists and scientists, and that InfoNile is working to bridge the gap.
We strongly believe that it is important to tell stories using data. Data helps to bring these stories out in a credible way, but also we want communities to take informed decisions, decisions based on science. And you know, you cannot tell stories without data and think that you are telling stories with science. We strongly believe that there is a big challenge of funding for journalists. They have no money. They want to tell stories. There are good stories out there. In South Sudan, for example, there are good stories around forests, around national parks, but journalists cannot go to these areas to tell this story because it is extremely hard.
InfoNile provides story grants, training, and mentorship to journalists across the Nile Basin for in-depth coverage on water, environment, biodiversity, and climate. The group has trained 250 journalists since it was launched in 2017. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Kampala.
From Kampala, we move back to the United States, where President Joe Biden is speaking out against Monday's Supreme Court decision that gives former presidents immunity from prosecution for any actions that fall within their official job duties. The High Court's ruling does not dismiss former President Donald Trump's 2020 election interference case, but as VOA's Dora Mejua reports, it does delay it.
President Joe Biden slammed the Supreme Court ruling that former presidents cannot be prosecuted for any actions that fall within their official job duties. A decision related to former President Donald Trump's alleged involvement in the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol.
The American people must decide whether Donald Trump's assault on our democracy on January 6 makes him unfit for public office in the highest office in the land. The American people must decide if Trump's embrace of violence to preserve his power is acceptable.
The former president reacted to the Supreme Court decision on his website by sharing a social media post, which appeared to be from his Truth Social platform. That said, the Supreme Court totally dismantled most of the charges against me. Joe Biden should now call off his dogs. Our country should now be focused on greatness again. The High Court did not dismiss the current election interference case against Trump. He's accused of trying to overturn the 2020 U.S. presidential election won by Biden. Chicago Kent Law professor Harold Krent says Trump's actions leading up to January 6 straddle both official and unofficial acts for which Trump could be prosecuted.
To the extent that he was acting as a private candidate, then his acts would fall into the bucket of unofficial acts. But to the extent that he was talking to the vice president about what he thought the vice president should do in the Senate, what to the extent that he was talking to the Justice Department about whether or not there was fraud in the voting, then he was acting in his official capacity.
The events of January 6th were mentioned only briefly during Thursday's presidential debate, but the insurrection could be a major campaign issue if the Biden campaign presses the issue, says George Mason University political science professor David Ramadan.
That's why I put the burden on the Biden campaign to remind that independent voter. Then it is a huge issue for them. If they're not reminded of it, day-to-day life, it's been 3 years and people start forgetting and they worry about other things.
With the American electorate so polarized on the left and the right, it is independent voters who could tip the scales on Election Day. George Mason University political science professor David Ramadan.
So independents are the only swayable. They will make or break this election. Women are on top of that swayable portion of the electorate. The young voters are also swayable. Now, they're not dependable voters.
So the election interference case against Trump likely goes forward, with a lower court making key decisions about appropriate charges in light of the Supreme Court ruling. Experts say a trial is unlikely before Election Day. Chicago Kent Law professor Harold Krent.
Yeah, this absolutely delays legal proceedings. If that was a goal of President Trump's camp, then it was accomplished.
That leaves it up to the Biden campaign to decide whether to make January 6th a central campaign issue. Dora McQuarr, VOA News, Washington.
The western U.S. state of Colorado is a popular destination for international students. Colorado State University in Fort Collins is one of the state's largest colleges. Svetlana Pristyanka takes a look at what draws so many students from other countries to Colorado.
Dustin Moreno from Panama decided that an American education would help him solve problems in his country's agricultural sector.
I decided to come to America for getting my master because America has one of the most, has one of the strongest universities in agricultural science in general, and also because of the English. I know that the English is the commercial language that we speak in everywhere.
Moreno was worried that the admission process would be difficult, but he says the university helped through a two-week course in English that is meant for international students ahead of their studies. Moreno studied wheat science at Colorado State University and plans to use his knowledge to tackle problems in Panama's agricultural sector. Among them, he says Panama doesn't have high-quality soil, there are periods of heavy rainfall, and the mountainous terrain restricts what crops can be planted.
When I was in Panama, I noticed that, you know, the big problem that we have in Panama is the wheat management, and we don't have a lot of people in that area. I saw that as an opportunity to study that. CSU has one of the strongest programs in wheat science in the U.S. I am almost done with my master. I am planning to get back to my country and stay there.
The university helps prepare students for job prospects in the U.S. and elsewhere by focusing on English programs. Laurel Bond is a senior instructor with Colorado State University's international programs.
Teaching English in this environment has been the greatest privilege of my life. It opens up a lot of opportunities for my students, advantages economically, academically, scientifically in those communities, but it also creates a huge barrier if you don't have really professional English.
Lauren Ginter is the director of the university's Program for Learning Academic and Community English, or PLACE, which helps international students acclimate to the campus.
Providing students with an opportunity to not only improve their language proficiency, but really to help them gain access to education and access, cultural access as well. I think for me, being an English language learner, being an international student, right, is more than just studying academics. Students need to be able to fully integrate into the CSU community, into the Fort Collins community.
Moreno says that studying in the United States also helped build his confidence.
Keep going, believe in yourself. I know that this is a kind of hard trip sometimes. You are going to feel that you cannot do it, but for sure you can do it.
During the 2023 academic year, the Colorado State University campus included international students from almost 30 countries. Svetlana Pristinska, VOA News, Denver.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024. When I'll leave you with Musa Juma and the song New Sudan. Listening to Musa Juma and the song Sudan Mpya. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Rob Macklin, we wish you a lovely evening. If you or your family miss this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Joseph Lacombe.